This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is for Master Dogen's 300 Koan Shobogenso. Case 56, Guishan's gift, the main case. Master Guishan asked Yangshan, I have a lay student who gave me 3 rolls of silk to buy a temple bell for bestowing happiness upon the world of the people of the world. Yangshan said, when the lay student brought you the silk for the temple bell, what did you give her in return? Guishan hit the sitting platform 3 times and said, this was my offering. Yangshan said, if you offered her that, how will it benefit her? Guishan again hit the platform 3 times and said, why is it that you dislike this? Yangshan said, it's not that I dislike it. It's just that that gift belongs to everyone. Guishan said, since you know that it belongs to everyone, why did you want me to repay her? Yangshan said, I just wondered how you understood that since it belongs to everyone, you could still make it a gift. Guishan said, don't you see? The great master Bodhidharma who came to this land from India also brought a gift. We're always receiving gifts from others. That Roshi's commentary. Giving and receiving are non-dual. Self and other are non-dual. When the way is surrendered to the way, you enter the way. In enlightenment, the way invariably comes through itself. The self gives itself for the sake of giving the self. It is purposeless. Other gives the other for the sake of giving the other. There is no intention. Spiritual teachings and material wealth are also not two. The practices of giving as well as receiving should always be in accord with the need and the imperative of time, place, position, and degree. To build a bridge, cook a meal, or make an offering is the practice of giving. Loving a mountain, eating a meal, or receiving an offering is the practice of receiving. When such actions are without design, both giver and receiver are united in a single indivisible thusness. The verse. The great earth innocently nurtures the flowers of spring. Birds trust freely the strength of the wind. All this derives from the power of giving, as does ourself. Coming into being. Happy Thanksgiving. So, I've always loved this koan, and I thought it would be nice as a Thanksgiving offering. Giving or generosity is one of the most important virtues and qualities of human nature. It is one of the most important practices within Buddha Dharma. It is the first paramita, the paramitas of crossing over to the other shore. Dana paramita, selfless giving. It is a language that everyone understands, all times, all places. And in the act of giving, inner and outer worlds are transformed. And in order for giving to take place, essential practices need to take place. Essential shifts need to stir. Kinsei Rinpoche said, generosity is the natural expression of a bodhisattva's altruistic mind, free from attachment. Aware of the suffering that can be caused by amassing wealth and then trying to increase and protect it, people strive to use it to make, or bodhisattvas strive to use it to make offerings to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and to those who are hungry and without food and shelter. Generosity is the jewel that fulfills every wish and the sublime sword that cuts through the knot of miserliness. In a very real sense, we can think of all of the various practices that we engage in as practices of generosity, of expanding our heart from miserliness, which is not just towards amassing wealth and property, but all kinds of miserliness, a kind of stinginess of being that in a sense is inherent within the sense of a separate self. Because as soon as that arrives, then the world gets sort of divvied up into areas and quadrants and places and having and not having. And so to be generous of heart, it's a basic way of being. Something that the precepts are teaching, are providing us with practice in and for all of our forms of practice, Zazen and walking meditation. Every invocation, every liturgy is really about giving. Because in giving, as Khyentse Rinpoche says, we have to let go. We have to recognize that we are in direct contact with someone, with a time and place, with a circumstance. We have to care about that. We have to care about the welfare and happiness of others. We have to care about the circumstances and situations we find ourselves in. We have to care about our impact. And we have to know, we have to trust deep within ourselves that we have something to offer, regardless of who, when, where, what, always. That giving, that generosity is our basic nature. There's a story of a person who, an old man who was renowned within his village as being the miser, right? The Scrooge of his time, right? Stingy with everyone and everything, family, friends, didn't matter. And he came to the Buddha asking for advice, asking for help. And the Buddha said, you need to train yourself in giving. And so he says, so take a small object, put it in your right hand, and give it to your left hand. And keep doing that. Once it's in your left hand, give it back to your right hand. And keep doing that until there's no longer any resentment or resistance. And then give small things to your family, the people closest to you. And then when there's no resentment or resistance to that, now give some small objects to friends and keep expanding that until you are able to give things freely to strangers, even to enemies. And for me, the key of that story, the most important part of it, is that he came to the Buddha asking for help. That set everything else into motion. That made everything else possible. Within his small-mindedness, his cold-heartedness, something within him was stirring. Something within him was not okay with that. He recognized that something, he needed something to change. He needed something more. It's like the raising of bodhicitta. Dal Roshi says, giving and receiving are non-dual. And it's really important that we understand in this language that it not, sound technical and dry. This means giving and receiving are not apart from each other. They're one indivisible action. They're not separate. Self and other are non-dual. That means you and I, you and everything, are not fundamentally divided. And given that that division, that sense of division, is the seed of every form of suffering, that should matter to us. The sense of division should matter to us, and the fact that that's not our basic nature should matter to us. And then, given that we care about that, what do we do? Right? So this old man went to ask the Buddha. And so we turn towards the Dharma. And so in that view, though, where self and other are two, are divided, are separate and distinct, then giving arises out of that way of seeing the world. And so it can be a way of, I give to get something. Giving and receiving, being not to, means there is no intention, there is no purpose. Giving is not for reward, receiving is not for some benefit. But in other ways, we can give in order to get something back, to gain recognition, to raise our status, to fulfill an obligation, to create indebtedness, to feel better, or to feel less worse. So Dada Roshi says, and he's drawing from Dogen's teaching here, he says, when the way is surrendered to the way, you enter the way. The way is your self nature. It's the nature of all things. It is the path. When your basic nature is surrendered to your nature, when the path is surrendered to the path, when the reality of all things is surrendered to the reality of all things. Saying it that way is kind of nice because it should sound like, well, how could that not be so? Exactly. How could that not be so? Only in our mind could that not be so. That's how powerful our conceptualizing, delusion-making, separation-creating mind is. And yet, it does that, this mind of ours, right, through our senses, based on what we perceive, right? Not because that view is fundamentally wrong, but just because that view, as the view, is fundamentally incomplete. And so if we think of when our basic nature is surrendered or returned to or released into or allowed to manifest as itself, we enter the way. And so in the Dharma, when a teacher says, just be yourself, it's very, very important that we consider that very carefully. Because we could just hear that as, oh, you mean just keep doing what I'm doing, right? And somehow I'm going to get a different result, right? So that should cause us to pause. Maybe that's not what's meant by just being yourself. Here, the emphasis is in just. Just be. In other words, nothing else. And so much of practice is the everything else. Not the just. And so Zazen thinks everything that is not just is what arises. Our thoughts, our karmic streams, our attachments, our desires, our expectations. So to just be yourself in that moment means to meet that just. No adornment. And to surrender that to that. Surrender that emotion, that anger, that sadness, that impatience to the anger, the sadness, the impatience, which is its natural inclination. That is its natural course if we don't get in the way. So Zazen is not getting in the way. How hard is that? Giving really is the fundamental practice of coming home. And, you know, I encourage you to really look at how is Zazen giving? How is mindfulness giving? How is just not attaching to things giving? And to see the truth of that, and also to see how that is that being true and that not being enough. Just as in the pure precepts, not creating harm, such a profound, simple teaching, cease from harm. Right? We understand the word, so let's just all agree. We can all agree right now to do that. Right? No more. Okay? We know that it's not that easy. Right? But as profound as that is, and as profoundly as that impacts our lives and affects the world, it's not enough. And so there is practicing good, actualizing good for others, being generous, magnanimous. And really, the struggles for practice, I think if we really look at it, are all of the moments where that's not happening. We're not being generous. We're not being generous with ourselves. That's why the judging mind is so important to let go of, to release. Right? Because it's the voice of that miser, of that inner tyrant. And so when we come to practice, not so much to give, but to get, we struggle. Right? When we want to have a calm mind or have a joyful heart or to be free of suffering or to be clear within our understanding. But all of those are good things and natural outgrowths of practice. They themselves, those natural qualities, attributes, are not the problem. It's the desire to get them. It's having that, being driven by that impulse. And so most of us come into practice. I sure did. You know, I wasn't thinking about what I was going to give. I was thinking about what I wanted to get. I remember when I was in high school, I went on a bicycle trip, and probably was about 15, with a friend. During spring break, we got on our bikes, and we rode down to South Georgia. Pretty tough country. And lived for a week on a Christian commune. It was nice being there. I liked it. I kind of enjoyed it. So after I graduated high school, I wasn't going to go straight to college. I just wanted to go out and, like, I don't know, see the world and do something different, have some experiences. So I wrote to them, and I said, I'd like to apply for a period of residency. And they wrote back, and they, you know, I filled out an application. They wrote back, and they said, you need to just go out and live a little so that when you come, you can bring more life experience. And it hurt my feelings, you know, because I thought, I'm growing up, you know, I'm 17. What more do I need to know? You know? But it was really good, because what they were saying was, you're coming because you want to get something. We know that. We get that. But you need to come because you also want to give something. And you need to live a little bit more so you have a little bit more to give. I would have to learn that over and over. And so when we face the wall and face the self, to do so for the sake of giving, as Dado says, purposelessly, with no other intention other than to enter the way and to get out of the way so the way can enter itself. So Guishan here asks Yangshan, says, I have a lay student who gave me 3 rolls of silk so that I could buy a temple bell to bestow happiness upon the people of the world by sounding the bell, right? Bring the sound of that peace-fulfilling bell to the world. And Yangshan said, when you receive that gift, what did you give in return? Giving and receiving are not two. In giving, there must be receiving. In receiving, there must be giving. Dada Roshi used to say, if we don't give when we receive, then we become a thief. And so Yangshan says, what did you give? And Guishan hit the platform. This was my offering. So for the student sitting with his koan, that question, what is that offering? What is Guishan offering? So the Buddha said there are 3 forms of giving. We can give material gifts. And when we give them without reservation, without regret, without a bargain, just giving, then what we give, the size is not so important. And so there are stories of children or very poor people giving, you know, a flower or a rock, you know, and that having more value than somebody who is very wealthy giving a very wealthy gift because of the intention. And so material gifts are important. And that, too, is a language that we all understand. And so we give gifts as a way of offering something and expressing something. The second form of giving is to save a life or to protect a life from danger, from fear, from harm. And so Jizo Bodhisattva, Kenon Bodhisattva, are these bodhisattvas whose great vow, great dedication is to protect those in harm's way from harm. And so there's the practice, particularly in the Tibetan tradition, of purchasing, you know, birds or fish or animals that are going to be killed or, you know, caged and releasing them. And that's a practice of giving, right? And creating merit and good karma by the virtue of maintaining life, affirming life. And so we can think of our various roles in our lives, a parent to a child or a teacher to a student or a friend to another friend, where we help protect from danger someone we care about or a stranger. And then the third form of giving is to offer the Dharma, to offer the gift of the path of liberation, of the possibility of freeing ourselves from attachment and self-clinging and binding emotions and the inner tyranny. So Guishan hit the platform three times. This was my offering. So what kind of gift is that? Daroshi says, the practices of giving as well as receiving should always be in accord with the need and the imperative. And this is a basic Buddhist principle about compassion and about generosity. That giving is not taking place within a void. Right? And so Yasutani Roshi talked about, and we teach this in, usually in, often in context with the precepts, that within every moment, there is a time, there is a place, there is a position between ourselves and what we're relating to, whether it be a person, an object, a place. What is our position? And then what degree of giving, what degree of action is needed? And this can be extremely helpful in terms of how to manifest compassion, how to enter into a situation and respond, so that we understand that just because we have a good intention, we have a generous heart, that in a sense, that's not enough. We need to, in a sense, do due diligence. We need to try and be aware, where am I? Right? We can be very enlightened into the nature of things and walk into a situation we know nothing about. Right? We can see into the nature of things and walk into a situation where we are bound by things that we are not yet clear about. Right? Our own blindnesses. Here, Guishan is making an offering to a student of the Dharma, right? And so if his mother or a stranger, you know, made that offering, Guishan might have offered something very different in return, right? Here he offered these three strikes on the platform to awaken the student from his sleep state, her sleep state, to startle her into entering the way, into allowing herself to just be herself. In that gesture of Guishan's, there is no self and other, there is no giving and receiving. It doesn't mean anything. Daroshi says, when such actions are without design, purposeless. And this is why this is a spiritual practice, a mystic path. Because in our ordinary world, everything has a purpose. Everything is done with design. And that's where the skillfulness of the bodhisattva, so when they offer something to help someone, they want it to help them. That's time, place, position, degree. That's each of us doing our own work, our own practice, freeing ourselves so that we can see who is in front of us clearly with less of our own blindness. So that in that very action of giving, free of self, there is no design. It's just giving. It's sort of like when you go on a trip, you know, whether by walking or bicycle or car. First, you know, have to know how to walk, how to ride a bicycle, how to drive, and sort of the terrain of that mode of travel, right? So you have to develop your skills, and then you have to consult the map, which are soon not to exist anymore. But let's say, out of this, for the sake of preservation of old skills, that you pull out a map and plot your course, right? So you also have to develop those skills, right? So that's, in a sense, establishing your time, place, position, degree, developing your practice so that when you hit the road, that is so integrated within you that now you can travel without design, purposelessly, just. Yangshan says, if you offered your lay student that, how will she benefit from that? Guishan hits the platform three times. Why say any more? Guishan has answered the question completely. But he goes on to say, why is it that you dislike this? Yangshan is asking from the place of not knowing. They're having a discussion from deep within what Dogen calls the inner chamber of enlightened understanding. Guishan is not concerned with benefit or not benefiting, right or wrong. It reminded me of the story the Buddha told of the person who throws the stick, the dog chases the stick, brings it back, throw the stick, dog chases the stick, brings it back, throw the stick, chase, 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 throw, chase, throw. The Buddha said, that's one way. He said, when you throw a stick for the lion goes after the one throwing the stick. Right? It's not deceived by the stick. It's not interested in the stick. Here, Guishan isn't interested in benefiting or not benefiting. And so he says, why is it that you dislike my offering? He goes after the one throwing the stick. He's not fooled. Yangshan says, it's not that I dislike it, it's just that that gift belongs to everyone. Yangshan knows this, Guishan knows this, all who have entered know this. You know, it's a part of training that a teacher will ask a question. And sometimes knowing that the student is not yet clear. Sometimes knowing that the student has some understanding, but they ask the question because they want to give the student a chance to respond again. It's like when a student presents a koan and the teacher says, say it another way. Show it another way. How do you see it? Sometimes I would go into my teacher and ask a question that I felt like I had some understanding about, but I wanted to know, how do you see it? I wanted to see another perspective, another way of looking at this. And Guishan says, well, since you know that it belongs to everyone, why do you want me, why did you ask me, how did I repay her? And Yangshan said, I just wondered how you understood that since it belongs to everyone, you could still make a gift. If it belongs to everyone, how can you make it a gift? It's like the Buddha realizing great enlightenment. All creatures possess self-nature. All creatures have already entered the way, are already home. And because of that, he spent the rest of his life teaching. Just as Guishan says, don't you see? The great Bodhidharma who came to this land from India, he also brought a gift. We're always receiving gifts. That's it. That's really it. And so then what is our lack of gratitude when we're feeling ungrateful? And we all know that experience. What's actually going on? If all of us are united in a single indivisible thusness. And generosity is the expression of that. That giving is the nature of being. Then how could we, which means receiving is also the nature of our being, then what is not feeling gratitude? Kind of a curious thing, eh? And of course, we can point to lots of things. You know, the adversity in life, not being treated well, being poor and destitute, not having advantages, things, real things. But in a deeper sense, or I'd say a spiritual sense, a lack of gratitude perhaps comes from a sense of isolation, where there's a sense of not being in contact and therefore not having a sense of giving and receiving taking place, being in exchange in every moment. And that's why, you know, in so much of our training, giving and receiving is made, is expressed vividly, dynamically, every service, every time we come to the seat. We bow, we turn, face the Sangha, we bow. In Uryoki, every bowl that arrives, to fill our bowls, we respond with a bow, and the bow is returned. When we go into Doksan, when we make offerings at the altar, when we dedicate our practice to others, when we make our vows, all of those moments are practices of giving. Each and every creature fulfills its virtue by the power of being. By the truth that both giver and receiver are united in thusness. The footnote, Dada Roshi's footnote, to the last line, we are always receiving gifts from others, Guishan said. Dada Roshi says, heaven is filled with it, earth is covered by it, the hand that gives is also the hand that receives. You know, when we're frightened, when we're angry, when we're filled with strong emotions, negative emotions, anxiety, it's hard. It's much harder to be generous, right? Because we pull in. We assume a much more protective stance, you know, to keep things in, to keep things out. It makes it difficult to be generous. And that's why in the precept, you know, do not be withholding. When we realize we have something to offer, we're not offering. What's the medicine? Be generous. And in order for that to happen, in order for us to go, right? Something has to give way, inside and outside. Something has to melt a little. It's an incredible practice. You know, when you're really in a sort of a dark, folded in, you know, not much caring for the world state of mind, or caring for someone, you know, to bring forth in your mind the desire for their well-being. You know, sometimes it's like that. It's like, you know, making the space for that in your mind to just say those words. No, I don't want to. And of course, you know, what makes this genuine and powerful is sincerity. So we can do that in the same moment that we are holding back from doing that. But when we see that, when we're mindful of that, we're well aware of the whole of that landscape. We're not playing around. We're not deceiving ourselves. We're not pretending. I see closing in my desire to hold in and not give that. But I also see like that guy coming to the Buddha, but I don't want to live there. I don't want to make that my life. And so, but recognizing that stinginess, that miserliness, that anger, that hatred, I try and bring something forth. That's an honest moment. And we see, you know, we see so many examples of stinginess, miserliness, greediness, self-clinging, of not, you know, insincere words, insincere actions. But, you know, I think those really, in the landscape of things, are minor sparks, minor lights, in a world in which when we look, and we don't have to look very far, we are surrounded by, immersed in, infinite actions every day of generosity, of giving, of sincerity, of generosity, of magnanimity, and sincere concern. Shanti Davis said, for all those ailing in the world, until their every sickness has been healed, may I myself become for them the doctor, the nurse, the medicine itself. And so how do we bring forth this sense, this aspiration? And so Shanti Deva, in this very brilliant, vivid, dynamic language, may I be a doctor, a nurse, may I be the medicine that heals. May that be what I make my life about. Because, as he says, all that I possess and use is like the fleeting vision of a dream. Everything. It fades into the memory, and fading will never be seen again. And so to cling, to grasp, is to ensure our unhappiness, to ensure our disappointment. May I be a treasure ever plentiful, and stand in front of every creature, every being, a varied source of all that they might need. In other words, to see ourselves as like abundant, right? True generosity, I think, has to arise out of humility also. This is not like, I'm a big deal, I've got everything you need. That's not at all what's happening here. This is, may I in some small way, in some measure, serve? How can I help? My body and all my goods besides, everything that I possess, and all the merits gained and to be gained, every good action and the consequence of every good action that I may bring forth in my life, I give them all away. I give whatever goodness comes forth, I give it away, withholding nothing to bring about the benefit of beings. This is the great generous heart of the Bodhisattva. And this is presented to us by Shantideva as our aspiration. This is what we can aspire to. And to do that, again, let me say again, without striving for perfection, make it a practice. Just make it a practice. He expresses it in a kind of complete form, so it can be a complete aspiration, but understanding that we can practice it, which means to not look for absolutes. He says, nirvana, peace, liberation, is attained by giving everything away, by non-grasping. And this is my aspiration. Therefore, everything must be given up. And it is best, if I'm going to give things up, what better thing to do than to give it to you? What better thing to do with it than to let it be useful? So to see our lives and everything that we do, the skills we develop, the work that we do, the people that we come into contact with, the situations that we both create and that come to us and that we go out to find, that we see those as opportunities to give it away, to cultivate generosity. And the power of giving is that it is self-fulfilling. You know, that I think when we really pay attention, when we're feeling very held in, and you really sort of allow yourself to make contact with that, it's kind of like, It's not a good state to be in. And when we give, check that out. And that to me is just an affirmation of our basic nature. When we turn against it, when we don't live in accord with it, it doesn't feel good, just at a basic level. And we can do something that is very difficult to do, like give, in a moment when it's difficult to give, and know it's the thing to do. Not necessarily because we're obligated or because we're told, but inwardly we know it's how we want to live our lives. And in that moment, even in the midst of that challenge, there's a sense of yes. We already know. And to trust that. And so as Dada Roshi says, and to appreciate that building a bridge, cooking a meal, making an offering is the practice of giving. Loving a mountain, eating a meal. Receiving an offering is a practice of receiving. We have to do both. And sometimes they're not equally easy and not equally practiced. I was remembering when we were in India, we'd get off the bus because we were traveling quite a bit by bus and in many of these small villages and outposts where we were, and suddenly we'd get off, there'd be nobody there. Within minutes, we'd be surrounded by oftentimes kids and young people and just people who were, because there weren't many Westerners as we were traveling that we were coming across, and so a lot of people would show up. And there were people who were begging and, you know, trying to garner certain kinds of gifts. And in each of these moments, it's like there were certain moments where there was a kind of universal language, right? Like a smile, like a gesture, a physical contact, a camera. I mean, cameras were everywhere. And not just in our group, but everywhere. And that I realized these cameras have become like a universal language because everybody wanted to have their pictures taken with everyone. And in doing that, everyone, there was a kind of joyfulness. I mean, I wonder what happens to all these photographs. Maybe not the point. But just the action. And that in that, suddenly, you know, the fact that, you know, we are in essence strangers. We don't speak each other's language. We have no idea where each of us is coming from. None of that matters. Not in that moment. We're not solving each other's problems. We're not curing the ills of poverty. But something was happening that was kind of special. We were on the last day. Just the U.S. group was, the Kiwis had left, were heading back home. And we were walking, going to the National Gandhi Museum, and we passed, it was Sunday, I think, and we passed a cricket field. And there were a whole bunch of people out, all age groups, playing cricket. So we wandered in to try and understand this arcane game. to me, anyway. And so we were just hanging out, and this group of teenage guys came up, and we were talking, and sort of I was looking at their bat, and we were sort of, you know, bonding, you know, in sports. And Kokwan, one of the students, picked it up and walked over, and one of the kids threw a ball, right? And so suddenly it's like, we got something going here. And so they were like very excited, and so he swung and missed, and they were all cheering, right? They struck the yank out, right? And then they threw another ball, and he hit it, and they cheered even louder. And I thought, yes. A language that everyone understands. The great earth innocently nurtures the flowers of spring. Birds trust freely the strength of the wind. All this derives from the power of giving, as does our self coming into being. Such a beautiful poem. These pointing to all that we're surrounded by, right? All of this codependency. But for you, I am. But for you, we are. The power of Sangha, the power of Dharma, the power of coming into being. And so to really appreciate the importance of the teachings and the practices, and to really examine them, to see all of the ways in which this essential practice of giving and generosity, opening up the heart, is permeating Buddha Dharma, permeating Dharma practice. Because more we understand it, the more we can appreciate what we are in the midst of. And then to let that radiate out. So, happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.